another episode of the Multiverse Musings Midcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me this week is my co-host, Donnie. Donnie, how's it going?
What's up, Lantern fans? It's Lisa Drax, Secret Crush. It's the Emerald Enthusiast.
It's the Multiverse Musings Midcast presents Comics Corner, by the way.
But there we go.
But here's the guy. It wouldn't be an episode if I didn't screw up the title of one of my podcasts. So here we go. This is where we are. We are going, the main crux of our discussion is going to be future state, particularly as they relate to The Flash and Green Lantern. So that will be the bulk of our discussion. We will talk about some comics news, namely the April solicitations, I should say. But there is some live-action news that I just want to mention. It's a quick mention, but before that, Donnie, on the DC front, what have you been watching and what have you been reading?
As far as what I've been reading, I read the first Wonder Woman Future State. Obviously, Green Lantern Future State, Flash Future State. Continue to read Far Sector. What else did I read? There was something else, but also continuing to watch Supergirl in preparation for its last season. And yeah, so I've had plenty of delving into DC lately. So,
for me, in terms of reading, much of the same. It's I'm in a future state of mind.
I also forgot about this one, Generation Shattered. This is
yes,
a good one.
We will be covering that. I think I've told you this off air, maybe not, but I told Steven, so I probably told you at some point. But I think what we're going to do is for all three of us together, we're going to review Future State Justice League 1 and 2 together, like both issues, plus Generation Shattered.
All right.
So that all three of us can be together and
yes,
do those three issues. But yeah, I've been reading Wonder Woman, Future State Wonder Woman is one that I want to call out as being really, really, really good. And then I won't spoil our discussion of Flash and Green Lantern because we're going to talk about that. So why spoil it, you know, in the sort of preamble? So that's what I've been reading. Watching in terms of DC. Well, we recently did our review of the Smallville pilot for our countdown to Superman and Lois. So there's that.
Yes, indeed. Yep.
And if you haven't seen that yet, it's up on YouTube. So head over to the Multiverse Musings Vidcast YouTube channel and watch that episode. But the only bit of news, speaking of watching episodes, is that the HBO Max the Suicide Squad prequel series, Peacemaker, starring John Cena and spearheaded by James Gunn, has officially started filming. And even if there are eventually set leaks and photographs, don't expect to see John Cena because, as we know, you can't see him. So there's that. But yeah, that's filming is underway, and I look forward to that for sure. But with all that being said, Donnie, shall we get right to our reviews?
Yes, we are going to review.
No, we shouldn't. We should do the April solicitation. Why am I?
Yes, you should do those as well.
Why am I skipping the good stuff? All right, so April solicitations have come out. And I want you to definitely give us your thoughts on the reveal of the new Green Lantern title. But before that, I'm going to go on a mini rant if I can.
Okay.
Because it seems like every time DC solicitations come out, there are these folks who get bent out of shape over the Batman titles. And the way they speak, it's as if the only titles that are in the solicitations are Batman titles. That's a fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I look at the solicitations, I see a Swamp Thing title. I see a Justice League title. I see a Flash title. I see Green Lantern. I see Suicide Squad, which does not have Batman in it, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
So I see, three Superman titles. So they're not, there are other titles there. Far Sector is not a Batman title. Last time I checked, the last issue I read, he wasn't in there. Has he shown up recently, Donnie?
No, Batman is not giving Joe Mullane any training. So.
All right. Okay, good. there's a Rorschach book. There's a Scooby-Doo, Where Are You, that doesn't feature Batman. So, I don't know. I see a lot of other books. Sweet Tooth. You get the point where I'm going. American Vampire doesn't feature Batman, although if they did put the Red Rain Batman in there, that'd be kind of cool. The point I'm making is this freak out, oh my God, it's only Batman. DC only cares about Batman. Look, are there more Batman titles? Yeah, I'm not going to deny that. Hmm. Does some of his supporting cast, like Catwoman, Nightwing, Robin, have a book? Yes, but that's a status quo that's been in place since what, the 80s?
Yeah, I mean, as Batman goes, DC goes. And I know Batman is not to everyone's taste, but that's what people buy. They want books of Batman supporting cast. Yeah. So, and I don't mind those. I occasionally get Batman books that are very entertaining. So
yeah, again, like to me, here's the thing. Batman being one of my favorite characters is great because my character is selling well enough to support several books. Now, do I wish every single character was selling the levels that Batman sells? Absolutely. But I'm sorry that, Ragman doesn't sell enough copies to warrant his own book. Same goes with Cyborg. Same goes with Hawk. Look, Hawkman recently had a run that lasted 29 issues. I believe that's the longest running Hawkman titles, 29 issues. That is not a ringing endorsement for sales numbers. I mean, look, it was a great book. I read it. I bought it. It was a great book. I'm not disparaging the book or the work of Robert Venditti at all. What I'm saying is, for DC to continue publishing books on, as I jokingly point out, Ragman, or for a Hawkman book to continue or get another try, or for, Dr. Fate or the Spectre, for somebody like that to have a long sustaining book that runs for 50 to 100 issues, it needs to sell. It needs to make money. So if your favorite character, unfortunately, can't sell enough books, DC's not just going to put out a title and lose money. So,
and right now, characters like Harley Quinn, Batgirl, Nightwing, those are all hot characters.
When these titles come up, so when you see, because I believe it's going to happen, when DC does pull the trigger on a JSA book, my suggestion to all these people that complain about the excess of bad books is buy the JSA book, tell your friends to buy it, and instead of hashtagging nonsense on Twitter, Why don't you hashtag for them to buy more comics?
Yeah, we need to keep the doors open at DC. You know, if Batman's not your thing, that's fine. But we need to make sure that we're supporting the comic book industry in this difficult time.
But my point is, if you want these other characters to have books, like if you want a Dr. Fate book, if you want a Jay Garrick Flash book, if you want, you know, Alan Scott Green Lantern, whatever, when the JSA book comes around,
buy it.
You better buy it and help the cause, because a lot of people complain, well, DC doesn't promote anybody but Batman, but I hate to break it to these people, but I don't see DC running advertisements on television or on the radio for even Batman books. They just don't. So you as a reader have to use your social media platform. Again, there are things that you can't change that are being hashtagged until the cows come home pointlessly. But you can talk about comics on Twitter. You can hashtag about that and get people to buy and maybe convince people to buy them. Do shows like ours where you talk about the comics. Spread the word. Spread the word about your favorite character. But if all you're going to do is complain about the amount of Batman books and that's it, you're not helping your cause.
Yeah.
So that what I'm saying is, like, we got to look at this factually. Batman makes money. Ergo, Batman books are going to be published. Mm-hmm. This is the way business works. Not to sound like Vince McMahon or Shane or Stephanie, but DC is going to do what's best for business. And publishing Batman books is best for business. Let's deal in reality. And again, you can make a difference. If you're a Dr. Fate fan, talk about Dr. Fate till the cows come home. Hashtag Dr. Fate. Mm-hmm. And that's what you got to do as a comic fan.
Well, I would agree, because if I want Green Lantern and some of these other characters who don't sell as well as Batman, I got to wish for Batman's success. Yeah. So some of that can kind of, you know, rub off on the other titles that I might want.
Here's an example. If you see the Green Lantern title, right?
Okay.
And so the solicitation comes out. Number one, brand new, right? And your reaction as an influencer on Green Lantern, and I'm not saying we're God knows who, we're anything special. We're just two guys that love this stuff and talk about it. But, you know, you have a little bit of sway, no matter how large or small it is. People enjoy your opinions on Green Lantern and kind of take them to heart. I've seen from the product reviews that you do and stuff like that. So if you see that solicitation and your first comment on it is pass or not for me or not my Green Lantern, what are you doing to help the cause? Mm-hmm. So here's my question. If that book lasts 12 issues and then gets canceled and there's a drought of Green Lantern books, are you not just as much at fault as anybody else if you're putting on that kind of vibe? Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's always been my concern, is that, you know, I have my favorites with Green Lantern. I like most of the characters. And Green Lantern has gone through periods that hasn't been my favorite, but I really want to support that name getting out there, because I don't want to see it go into the dustbin of DC history. And, you know, I again... we just talked about this on our previous podcast or a vidcast that we were doing for WandaVision, that you don't know until you actually read something how it's going to play out. Yeah. And, you know, the new solicit shows Kelly Quintella. We also know Jon Stewart's going to be in it. It has possibilities. We see that she has a gauntlet. It also seems to suggest from the cover that I saw that Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner, Saronic Natu, Kilowog, they're all going to be in it, at least we think. So it has possibilities.
It seems like more of a core book with a focus on John, what was her name? The Teen Lantern.
Kelly Quintella.
Kelly. Yeah. And even they've announced Joe Mullen from Far Sector is coming in.
Who's already Green Lantern in Future State. Yeah. So,
and I think this is a great move for the Green Lantern title, because, again, I know some people say that they don't need to see somebody that looks like them for a book to be relevant. But some people need that. And I think it'll be nice for the focus of the Green Lantern book, not only to be to potentially be a core book, but also to focus on characters that don't look like a piece of Wonder Bread. Mm-hmm. I mean...
That's a fair point.
I mean, we've had that for how many years now? You know what I mean? Yeah. And again, I love Kyle. So I love a solo Kyle book. But I also enjoy John. I don't have much experience with the Teen Lantern. But from what I've read of Joel, I'm loving her already. So
yeah.
I think this kind of diversity across the board and potentially being a core book is going to be a benefit to the title.
I think so. And you know, Hal, there are a lot of hardcore Hal Jordan fans out there. And I'm one of them.
I like him too.
But we don't know what's going to happen with Hal at this point. And so I'm not so concerned that they're just going to like sideline Hal for 5 years.
No.
They'll work him in somehow. So
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one that I'm looking at. And the artist is Dexter Soy. And he's top notch.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for that. And Jeffrey Thorne, we're going to talk about his Green Lantern work shortly. But looking at the solicits, Donnie, I gotta say, I'm loving the what I'm seeing from Justice League. The covers of that look amazing. So of course, you know, Justice League is one I'll be definitely getting. In addition to the Green Lantern, the Flash looks like it's going to be continue to be a good book.
Oh, yes.
Because, again, that's one of the coolest covers I've seen. I like the story. I like what the story is promising. Again, that multiversal nature of the Batman-Superman team-up title with their old-school kind of costumes from the late 30s and early 40s has me intrigued. The continuation of the Crime Syndicate miniseries is one I'll be keeping an eye on as well. I think Brian Hitch is doing the artwork on that. No, I'm wrong, sorry. I was way off. Yeah. Well, he's doing backup story art, yeah. I'm not 100% wrong on that.
A lot of these Future State books right now, they are anthologies with several writers and artists. So
And you know, Wonder Woman again is one that I'll be keeping an eye on. And you know what intrigues me? Suicide Squad, because the addition of Connor Kent, Superboy, on that team, is quite unique. Quite unique, and I'm curious to see. Where that goes. So there's a lot. Again, I'm going to do my core six DC books, and then everything else is going to, like, physical, like I said. But then physicals are going to be the Action Detective, Superman, Batman, Superman, and JL. And then digitally, I'm doing Green Lantern, Flash, Nightwing, Wonder Woman. The Crime Syndicate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a good mix. But I am going to be buying a bunch of these titles. So... I can't wait. And like I said, you, me, and Steven are going to have a lot of fun covering some of these books. The solicitation, the story descriptions, a lot of them just grab me. And I personally, from a personal standpoint, haven't been this excited for upcoming books in quite a while. So is there anything that you that sticks out to you as, aside from Green Lantern, obviously? Because we know that.
Yeah, the Flash, I think, is very interesting. I haven't quite got a handle on who Yara Flor is yet, but I think that has plenty of potential. So I'm excited to see where this goes. And, you know, I like this idea of kind of showing some snapshots into the future and then kind of bringing things back to a new status quo. Let's just see where it goes, you know. Yeah. And, yeah, like I said, I'm a comic book guy overall, but I've always found DC to do plenty of things that are right, and I never give up hope that DC is going to go into a phase where I'm not going to enjoy anything. That's never been the case. So
it looks like a fun time, continuing in Future State and then onward to March and April. Mm-hmm. So you, me, and Steven are going to have a lot of fun reviewing some of these books on Comics Corner here. So,
and I definitely want to pick up some of those variant covers. I'm seeing a lot of gorgeous cover art. So,
oh, that Justice League one. That, oof. Oh, and there's also, okay, just because I know this might upset some people, but but I don't care. I'm going to say it. You know which one I'm looking forward to?
What is that, sir?
The Dark Knight by Tom Taylor and Andy Kubert. I botched that. Andy Kubert. If you guys if there are people out there that are a Frank Miller Batman / Ben Affleck Batman fan, this book looks like it will service your needs, because it looks like a younger version of the Dark Knight Returns Batman. So it basically looks like Ben Affleck's Batman in the nightmare sequences. You know, with the trench coat and the,
oh, yes,
the,
yes,
goggles.
Yes.
And in this story, he's going to London for a mission. So he's going to visit Steven. And if Bruce Wayne is expecting tea from Steven and muffins from Steven, he's got another thing coming. I can forewarn him about that. Tom Taylor could literally rewrite the phone book and I'd probably buy it. Him doing Batman and Andy Kubert, his work on Batman and Son when Grant Morrison was on the Batman books, which I was not largely a fan of Grant Morrison's Batman run, but the art by Andy Kubert was incredible. So I will also be picking that book up if I fail to mention it. That's the stuff that we have coming on the horizon. But let's get back to the future. See how I worked that in? by discussing Future State Flash and then Future State Green Lantern. Yeah. So, Donnie, what's going on with the Flash in Future State?
So we get a story called Death Race. And at this point, the Speed Force is no longer in touch with the Speedsters, or most of them at least, in the DC Universe. And so without the Speed Force, and by extension, no powers, you see Barry and Jay, Max Mercury, Avery Martel, and Bart Allen trying new ways to work as a team. And what they have done is they've raided the arsenal of a bunch of old Flash villains, and they are using that technology to raid the Thinker's lair, and who actually turns out to be there as Calculator. And so they are trying to use these to gain technology so they can figure out a way to rescue Wally West, who has turned into a Speed Force vampire. So what did you think of the setup here with the Flash?
Well, I like that they were kind of raiding old tech from the Flash villains. I think that's kind of cool, kind of smart, because the villains would do that the other way around. So I think turnabout is fair play, as they say. So I like that.
The art is really beautiful. Dale Eaglesham, which is a name that should be known to a lot of comic book fans. Gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with his art. Absolutely not. I also liked the aspect of, the Team Flash, mm-hmm. the comic book version, working together.
Right.
Iris was not around barking orders.
So you wouldn't have a problem with them saying, "We are the Flash."
No, because they are all the Flash. That's the difference. They're all speedsters. And also, I got to tell you, I did get a little frightened when the calculator was brought on board, because, as you know, in the Arrowverse, the calculator is Felicity's father. And I'm like, please, dear God, don't do this to me.
So you freaked out just a little bit. Okay.
Thankfully, Felicity was nowhere to be found in this book. And I really liked, I was shocked that there is a casualty in this story.
Seemingly so, very early on, yeah.
What's your take? You want to spoil that or not?
So spoilers, we're going to say 3, 2, 1, in the middle of this raid, trying to get enough technology to save Wally, or to contact Wally at least, Bart Allen, AKA Impulse, is seemingly killed. And, there's also a really good piece of dialogue here. I like the fact that Max Mercury tries to save him, and he laments the fact that he's too slow. Because he can't, he's just using technology now. It was the weather wand, I believe. And he lamented the fact he was like, I could have saved him, but I was too slow.
And you know what's cool? Not cool in a good way, but is you see the effect that all the superheroes eventually has. It's not all, fun and games. Even in The Flash, who is a more of an uplifting, upbeat, positive character, like you see the effect, the emotional effect that these consequences of their heroism has on these characters, especially, like you said, Max, and of course Barry. So I love that they even though Flash is typically more of a gung-ho, lighthearted character, they're really showcasing that. Now, I know a lot of fans are concerned, or were concerned, when they saw some of the cover art and it showed Wally going crazy and decimating his teammates.
Which I got to say, I liked, by the way.
And, it was a cool cover, yeah, for sure.
Having been through Emerald Twilight, I know that a hero going crazy doesn't mean that they are irredeemable. There are ways to bring them back. So.
But the explanation of why Wally did that, and who was in control. The fact that it was another entity taking over his body and his conscience, I think will make it an easier pill for some Wally fans to swallow.
Sure.
And it's a cool villain.
I really like it. And
it's one of the Black Racers kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Barry says something in the issue that there's something in the Speed Force that made Wally hungry. And you see that he kills Wallace, another version. Again, we're dealing with the multiverse here, another version of Kid Flash, and that he attacked the Teen Titans and that he stole Barry's speed. And Wally looks, again, very vampiric here, very evil. Yeah. And you also see that Central City is in chaos without the Flash. Some interesting art too.
Absolutely, how important the Flash is to that city.
Yeah.
Now you've brought up the Wally in this possessed state is like a Speed Force vampire. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we can't really say from the first bite to the last because he doesn't bite anybody. Right. But I just said it anyway, because it's my show and I'll do what I want. I love how they use the Thinker's technology mm-hmm. to communicate
right
with Wally. Like, I love that.
It's like a Speed Force Zoom call almost, you know, that they kind of collectively, they get together and they try to make, you know, contact with Wally on that plane of existence. So, yeah.
So if Keystone or Central City ever goes through stay-at-home orders because of, you know, the pandemic, they can all communicate with each other with these devices. It's cool. But, like, the physical, the artistic representation of that, like, how like, it was like a kind of like a phasing in and out hologram.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the visual representation looked really cool.
It was stellar art.
And you know the art is good when a character sitting on a couch is probably one of the most epic images you've seen.
Can like still you, grab your attention. Yeah, that's a great point.
You know how good the art is. And actually, when they descend upon the villain's lair and it's like on a bluff and it's almost like a mansion / castle, it looked very much like setting up that vampire vibe that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. It does really look like something out of a Dracula story kind of thing, right? So it really did set that mood, which I kind of liked. And we got to see Barry, you know, tinkering around in the lab, which is always nice, taking him back to his roots. It's cool. I really like this book. I really think it was a solid issue. Is there anything that we missed that you want to call attention to?
Well, no, at the end, I'll say, and I don't want to give out too many spoilers here. When they do come in contact with Wally, you know, the heroes don't immediately set things right.
No, absolutely not.
Another speedster is hurt. Another one seemingly dies. And things are still bad. And so at the end, you don't know exactly how the heroes are going to contend with Wally, with all the power that he has here. Yeah. So I'm very much looking forward to the next issue.
Oh, I can't wait. That cliffhanger was a great way to leave you wanting more, for sure. Absolutely. So with that being said, I think we could rate it. So Donnie, remember we're doing 5 for story, 5 for art. So
I'm going to say 4.5 for the story. It started off, you know, there was a little bit of a lull narratively, but it ended in just a wonderful way, and the art was outstanding. Again, this is an artist with whom I'm very familiar, so I knew it would be outstanding, and it was.
Yeah, and so the art is a 5?
Yes, art is a 5.
Okay. And my rating is pretty much the same as yours. The writing is a 4.5, and the art is a 5. So in total, it gets a 9.5 out of 10 from me as well. Can't wait to see more of Future State to Flash.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. So
all right, so on we go to Future State, Green Lantern.
Yes. On we go is right. This is another anthology, as we talked about earlier, and this actually has 3 different Green Lantern stories in it. The first story is called Last Lanterns, and the kind of central theme that we see with all 3 of these is that the central power battery has gone out. And in one of these stories, and I'll get to that later, we actually see that happen within the story. But Last Lanterns opens up with the battery having been dead for some amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's 2035 is when the story takes place. We see John Stewart and Salak and, a little bit to my chagrin, Nort, although he's probably the best I've ever seen him written here.
Yeah.
And they are still
working out. He's been working out a bit too.
But, yeah, just a little bit. Whatever he's eating, it does the body good.
He's,
so
he's taking his vitamins and saying his prayers, according to the Hulk.
Yeah, and even at one point in the issue, he says, "What you gonna do?" No, just kidding.
that would have been funny.
But what, you know, we see that the Lanterns are still trying to act as kind of a savior-type police force in the dark sectors. And when their rings went dark, they still try to, you know, again, be the good guys, be the heroes out there. And Yeah, it's very interesting. It's different than anything you've seen in a Green Lantern book for quite a while. Obviously, they're not in their uniforms. They're not using their rings. They have kind of energy swords and guns. John Stewart, again, you get the essence of his character here. I will say that.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they would have had some kind of more of like a uniform weapon, that they would have developed something else other than the swords and the guns, but that wasn't too big of a criticism, I'll say. Overall, again, this is kind of one big action scene. So you really see them still functioning as a unit and trying to get one another's back, and I really do like that. So what did you think?
Well, I really like the... like you said, it really, you're dropped in the middle of warfare. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think Jeffrey Thorne has brought this up in interviews, but he's made Mad Max comparisons, and you really get that kind of sensation with it. It's got a little bit of a Star Trek and Star Wars feel as well.
If you like cosmic stories, you'll like this.
Yeah, with like, because, you know, there's the team, the commander, it seems, or whoever John is communicating with. You know, that gave me Star Trek vibes, right? Because they're on a different planet, and there's a chain of command and the whole nine yards. And then their weaponry gave me a little bit of Star Wars vibes, right? So there's a bit of that. But I agree with your sentiment of them really trying to uphold the core essential values of what it means to be a Green Lantern, even without the ring, in that, you know, let's try and bring peace to the different worlds or the different sectors that we patrol. It's that same idea. You know, sometimes that involves getting into fights. Mm-hmm.
And they're doing this for a good reason. They're not just out there looking for trouble. They're trying to evacuate a planet. Yes.
Yeah, they're not trying to take over, you know, take over or anything like that. And what I really like is that I think that military vibe that John has, the military background, is still there. Like, he still takes control of the field. He's, you know, sort of calling the play, as it mm-hmm. would seem.
John's the most natural leader of the Green Lantern Corps, as far as the actual lanterns themselves. Yeah. He's always the one who is most able to take control and manage the other lanterns.
You know, so. and you see, I think you see the respect that Salak and Nort and all those guys have for him, in the sense that when, you know, John says, get the others to safety, you know, I'll stay behind and hold them off. Nobody wanted to leave John behind.
Right.
Like, they all said, no, we're staying with you. So it shows you the respect and the trust.
Yeah. And against tremendous odds, we might add, because the tide turns and we get this this kind of ominous warning that the God in Red is coming. And I do want to say, I don't want to say who, because I don't want it to be a spoiler. Things get really bad, and the character seemingly dies at the end of the story. So.
Yeah, and it was pretty gruesome too.
Yeah,
I mean, not gory, but gruesome in the way that it seems to happen. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, I really liked the art in his book as well. You know, not only was John written very well and totally upholding of his character, mm-hmm. Although he was written a little bit more, you could tell, he's a little bit more weary, war-torn. You know, you could tell John's been put through the
ring. Yeah, I mean, that's the story that Jeffrey Thorne is trying to tell here, that, you know, John has... You know, he has experienced a loss with, you know, John loves the core, you know, and without them functioning like that, that's been a trauma for him. So,
and those words, the words that anything John Stewart said and the emotions that, and kind of being, he knows and they know that they're overwhelmed, but they're going to fight like hell regardless. You could see all those feelings and emotions in the art. You could see it on John's face, on Nord's face, on Salak's face. Like, the art was so emotive and expressive, and I loved it. And I also loved when they're getting overwhelmed by the opposing army. You sense that with the art. Like, you could see it. There's no shying away from it. Like, they're in a crappy situation. And it doesn't look well for them. But the art really gives you a sense of the stakes here.
Yes.
So I was really happy with the story. And albeit, I can't wait to see what happens next in this particular story. But this gives me hope with the fact that Jeffrey Thorne is handling the regular ongoing when it starts up again in the regular timeline in March.
He's put a lot of enthusiasm out there for Jon Stewart. So it's always good to hear, and I know a lot of people.
And it shows on the page.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
You can see that he loves that character.
Yeah.
So I can't. I cannot wait. Getting a little bit of a clear, not much, but a little clearer picture via the solicitations of what he has planned. I'm even more here for it after reading this. So how do you want to rate these, Donnie? Do you want to do individual, like each individual story?
Yeah, why don't we do the individual stories?
So. Okay. So for this first story is, the story and the art.
Yeah, I'm going to give the writing 4.5 out of 5. I don't know whether it was Jeffrey Thorne or not, but like I said, I would have liked to had a little bit more of a uniform weaponry as far as the Green Lanterns using that. But I don't have a lot to criticize about this as far as the writing goes. Likewise, I like the art. I wasn't overly enthused with John's kind of weird hairstyle. That didn't really kind of strike me as a Jon Stewart thing. I would think that Jon just wanted to, you know, shave it off or have a tight crew cut or whatever. But again, minor criticisms. I really enjoyed this, and I'm interested to see, you know, the God in Red is coming. I'm like, are they talking about the Red Lantern Corps, or is it someone else here?
Because that's what I'm like. Oh, are they talking about Atrocitus?
I thought more along the lines of like the Butcher, the entity that inhabited the Red Power Battery, but so.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so I'm going to give it, look, I think I tweeted this out, so, it'll reflect my grade. So far, of all the stories I've read in Future State, this one's been my favorite.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, it's going to get a 5 in both story and art categories. Like I said, Jeffrey Thorne just gets Jon Stewart. And he's given us, in one issue, like increased, potentially dire straits. Right off the bat, there wasn't a slow build. There wasn't, you know, let's write for the trade and have a lull halfway through. It was just bang. Like you're getting bombarded and thrust into this world just like the characters are.
Yeah.
Like you see them in the middle of the war, you're thrown in the middle with them.
Mm-hmm.
And
he really grabs your attention. And, you know, one of the other criticisms I would have is there's a character in there that one of the few Green Lantern characters that I don't like, but that character also seems is the one who dies at the end. So, yeah, don't have a problem there.
Well, you spoiled it now. No, but I, you know what, I got to say, I don't have much exposure with Nort.
I didn't say Nort. You said Nort now.
Yeah, but everybody knows you hate Nort. You've already established that.
You know, I will say this. Jeffrey Thorne, for the little time that Nort was in there, sorry, spoilers, but that was the best that I've ever seen Nort written.
I actually felt, because of the little back and forth that he had with some of the other lanterns, you know, and the one treated him like a puppy and he'd get pissed off.
Yeah. If he wasn't, you know, written as a joke for all those years, if I had this version, maybe I wouldn't be so, unfond of that character.
In the little bit of time, Jeffrey Thorne made me get emotional about him dying, and I really don't have any experience with this character. So you got to give credit where credit is due. So, yeah, so it's a five on both writing and the art. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what's next. All right, so the Jessica Cruz.
So what is next is a story called The Taking of Sector 0123.
Yeah.
And it's a play again, on
the taking of problem 123, of course.
Or the luggage of the president in Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Remember that? That was his anyway. Yeah. So don't want to go off on a tangent. Anyway, likewise, Jessica is she's at a sector house and she has continued to act in kind of like a diplomatic role, almost, since her ring went out. She has, you know, again, like John, continued to try to be a hero. But what we see is that the Sector House here, it is invaded by three members of the Sinestro Corps who are thinking, okay, now that the Green Lanterns are gone, we're going to assume their role again. And that is Lo, Ugg One, and the one who has a secret crush on me. That's Lisa Drack, by the way. I've always thought that would be really cool because, you know, Lisa Drack, she had all those years of having this crush on Sinestro. I thought that would be an interesting thing if eventually he professed his love to her and she was like, oh, no, actually, I fell in love with somebody else along the way. I was like, well, that would be an interesting story, but yeah, I digress. Yeah. Anyway, Lisa Drack she's a really interesting character. This was a good showcase for Jessica here because you see that she's equipped herself kind of in like a John McClane style from Die Hard to deal with these Sinestro Corps members.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that it felt like it was a little over the top that she dealt with three of them and she didn't have a ring. But the art was really good. Again, Jessica, she kind of looks like a mechanic here because a lot of the things that you know about her, like the lantern over the eye, that's a manifestation of her ring. So she's kind of a visually stripped down character here, but she's obviously matured and gotten past being controlled by her fear as she initially was as a character.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the interactions here with her and the Sinestro Corps?
I did like the diehard aspect of her kind of, you know, skulking around the, you know, the vents of her station and sort of picking them off one by one. Did she not have a little bit of ring power available to her though? Because she had it on her neck at one point.
Yeah, no. As far as I need to go back and reread it, but it didn't look like she had really. Nothing was coming from that ring. That's just, it's kind of hanging on her necklace.
Yeah, so. it's just like a totem. Yeah.
Yeah.
She
has a number, again, this is a sector house. She has a number of things that were left there by the Green Lantern Corps. So she has weaponry.
So she had weaponry. Yeah. So it made her being able to wipe out is the wrong word, but to handle three
yellow. Being able to surprise the Sinestro Corps members. Yeah.
It made that more believable, I will say. For sure, but I just loved how you see the growth in her character, and how she's able to do that on her own and not be afraid anymore. She's really come a long way from her first appearance, and I loved it. And I think a showcase like this, the character's already popular. I think that's only going to strengthen her popularity. And then, should we spoil the big ending?
No, I think we there's a little bit more we should say, and we shouldn't spoil the ending there, though. That's kind of a big deal. One of the things I do like is that when she handles Ugg One and Lo, who aren't, let's face it, they aren't the most intelligent Sinestro Corps
members. They're fodder. They're like putties to the Power Ranger.
Yeah, Lisa Drack is incredibly dangerous. You actually see her make construct armor for herself, but I like the fact that when Jessica surprises her, she jumps out of the vent that she's in and she does the superhero landing, and she's like, it's Jessica Cruz here. You know, that was a little bit of a criticism I had of the character in the beginning. I like the fact that, you know, she had social anxiety, but I felt like at times that went on a little bit too long, and that was kind of the defining aspect of her character for too long. Here we see that she's in one possible future, and she's overcome that. She's a fighter now.
Yeah.
And there's a really good piece of dialogue that says, it was something along the lines of you can't fight against fear, and you can't deny fear for too long. You've got to learn to live with it. And so she's kind of made this zone. She's come to terms with her own fear over the years.
Yeah.
She realizes she can't erase it, but she has overcome it, which is what a Green Lantern is supposed to do. So,
yeah. No, that's very well said. And as you said, the art was great. Jessica's superhero landing moment was probably my favorite moment, apart from the ending, which we can't talk about because it's a massive spoiler.
Yeah. Something very unusual happens at the end. I don't know how fans will receive it. I like the idea.
It's an interesting wrinkle.
There's some interesting avenues they could go down with this. So
it's an interesting wrinkle given Jessica's new perspective on life. I'll say that. And if you've been following what we've been saying, you could probably piece together what we're talking about, or maybe not.
But it also says the end, and I was like, I hope that means just the end of the story in this issue and that you're not going to tell us anything else. I'm hoping not. So.
Even both secondary stories just said the end. So I'm curious what's going to be in the backups of the next issue if that is, in fact, the end of those particular stories. But, yeah, I mean, that's all I pretty much want to say. Another solid story in this book and another great showing for Jessica. So with that being said, what is your rating of this story?
Again, I'm going to go 4.5 as far as the writing goes. Again, I thought it was a little over the top that she took out two Sinestro Corps members who were ringed up. But overall, I thought the story came together well at the end, and I do like that wrinkle, or at least I think I do. And the art was, again, I like the fact that they're telling a different type of story, so Jessica looked different.
Yeah.
And so that told part of the story here, too, that this was not Jessica Cruz acting as a Green Lantern anymore. This was her having matured, and she is kind of fighting with her wits at this point.
And so art would be rated?
I'm going to give that a 4.5 too. I really want to say that I liked the inclusion of Lisa Drack, who again was drawn very well here. That's a character that I just can't get enough of. She's so creepy, but at the same time, she, in the past at least, she has kind of a tragic element to her character because she's so in love with Sinestro, who won't give her the time of day. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, for me, I'm going to say the story, the writing was a 4.5. I agree with you there. And pretty much the same little issue that you had with her taking out three Yellow Lanterns who were armed and she didn't have a ring. But the art for me is a 5. So I give it slightly more than you did. But it was, yeah, I really liked it. It gave Jessica a unique look, but kept the core look of the character intact.
So we're on to a story called The Book of Guy. Right. And again, I like this, what was it, 80 pages from DC, I believe it was. Something, or was it 80 or not? I don't know. Anyway, it's
50 or 60.
50 or 60, something like that. Anyway, but I like that we get three stories in the same issue. It definitely was bigger than the usual, like, usual comic style. Yeah, I really liked it. And you got, again, three different teams. You got three different writers. You got different artists, different colorists. And, yeah, it feels like a Green Lantern Corps book because you have different stories happening at different
times.
And
that's how, if you're going to do a full-on Green Lantern Corps book, that's how I think you should play it. So in the future, if they do dedicate a book to Green Lantern Corps, while the Green Lantern book focuses more on John and Teen Lantern and Joel, if you want to branch the other characters off, do that book in this kind of style.
Yeah.
But yeah, continue.
Well, what we see here is that Guy lands on the planet Raerlin, and there are two kind of fighting sects of the inhabitants of this planet. And he intervenes and stops the fighting, but then his ring goes out. So you see that this actually happens when the power battery fails. And so he's stuck on this planet with these aliens. And what's really funny is he kind of reverts back to the warrior style that we saw back in the 90s, the warrior style look with the T-shirt. And he figures out that they're kind of having this philosophical or religious war, and it all starts over a piece of space trash. And he's like, you idiots. And so I like this aspect of the character. You see that he kind of uses his common sense and his compassion.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have his ring. And he's like, he stops this war by using his intelligence.
Yeah, I think his... the character's straightforwardness and simplicity actually works in his favor this time around. Because even he can see how stupid this argument is.
Yep.
Whereas they can't.
Yeah, they can't. They're too blinded by rage. But Guy can see how stupid this is from the outside.
But, yeah. And what's funny is he becomes kind of it shows over the years as the years pass.
It does, yeah.
He becomes their leader because they think of him as this prophet who is all-knowing and all.
Yeah, he's the great peacemaker between the people.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of interesting.
And they even one of my favorite panels is the one where he cries, where you see the tear come down his face. I thought that was just it. You know, Guy, he hides his heart. He doesn't like to express himself, but when there are certain moments that you can tell he's a guy with a big heart.
Yeah,
and I really like that
no
moment.
No pun intended. Yeah,
yeah. Right.
okay, and especially we don't want to spoil too many things. We have to kind of spoil this because to make my analogy work, it has to be known. So the spoiler.
Okay, so spoilers: 3, 2, 1, and go.
So, in the last couple of pages of the issue, the warring factions kind of stop listening to a guy because he's being accused of being a false prophet, and that another space prophet, or the true space prophet, has come, and that person is Lobo.
Lobo, yes.
Now, I had a laugh because they're going back to they went back to the warrior kind of look in the 90s, and Lobo was a 90s, you know, big in the 90s as well.
Guy and Lobo, they Lobo was a big part of the Guy Gardner Reborn book. Yeah. So yeah. Back in the 90s. So
you have that 90s flair. But this whole book is kind of like a microcosm and a look, you know, a looking glass into the fandom, I would say. Because think about it. If you look at DC fandom, it's kind of like these two alien groups. You know, they're split down the middle. We have the Snyder Cut people who adored what Snyder did with DC, and you have the non Snyder people who weren't too keen on his vision and are happy that the universe has seemingly moved on from his. And then there was a period where HBO Max came in and said, all right, we're going to give you the Snyder Cut, but we're also going to also split off into a multiverse and go in a different direction. And for a time, everybody seemed happy. Right? Remember the fandom? Mm-hmm. For a brief couple of weeks, everybody was, hey, you're getting your thing, I'm getting my thing. We're all, yeah.
Imagine that.
You know, it's congruent. And then the disruptor, Lobo, or in this case, Ray Fisher comes into the picture, and here we are fighting again. So it just, to me, it felt very true to fandom life at the moment. So I appreciated it on that level and had a good laugh. I like the story. It was probably my least favorite of the three, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. So if there's nothing else you'd like to add, maybe we go ahead and rate it. What do you think?
Again, I'm going to say story-wise, about a 4.5. I really liked all three of these stories about equally. The art, about a 4.5 again. You know, this may not be something that, it may not be a landmark Green Lantern event the way some other things have been, but I really thought it was a lot of fun. I definitely thought it was worth the money. By the way, $5.99 from DC Comics. Okay. Yeah. I really like the cover, so yeah. And again, I also like the anthology style. So I forget exactly how many pages it was, but it satisfied. It did fan service to a lot of different lanterns and a lot of different style of story. So I think it covered a lot of ground, and I like what's happening. And yeah. Again, with Future State, it's only 2 months. So yeah. If you don't like this direction, things are going to change in a couple of months. So
yeah. For me, like I said, it was an entertaining story, but also the weakest of the three. So I'm going to go ahead and give the story a 3.5.
Okay.
Out of 5. And the art as well. I think out of the three artists, this was my least favorite. I'm not going to say it's weak because he could certainly draw better than I ever could. So it's not weak. It's just less of my cup of tea than the other two. So 3.5 for both the writing and the art. Hey, 7 out of 10 overall for a particular story still isn't bad. I know we live in a culture where it's either, you know, the most epic thing ever or the worst thing ever, but that's not how I roll.
Right.
You know.
I can usually find something. When it comes to Green Lantern, yeah. I always find something that I like.
A solid 7 in total is still a good rating in my book, and that's what I give, you know, this particular third story in this anthology series. But on the whole, of the anthology series, I will say, and not only that individual Jeffrey Thorne story, but on the whole, this Green Lantern anthology, when compared to the other anthology so far, the Green Lantern book is still my favorite so far.
Cool deal. Yeah.
So, and for all those, and this is coming from, again, before anybody freaks out and calls me a homer, the hardcore Batman fan just said, having read a Batman anthology, just said the Green Lantern one was his favorite. So I don't know, take that for what you will. But yeah, that's it. There it is. We're rolling. This is our second Future State Comics Corner. There's more coming.
By the way, I've listened to a couple interviews with Jeffrey Thorne. He's a lot of fun to listen to. He's a very animated guy. You can tell he has a lot of passion for the business. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love it. I want to read some of his Black Panther, King in Black issues. Mm-hmm. I think he's got one or two or something like that. But I definitely want to read some more. And I tweeted him telling him how much I enjoyed his story and was looking forward to the next one. And he said, part two is sick. So I'm looking forward to it for sure. But that brings our episode to a close. So Donnie, if our viewers, I almost said listeners, but if our viewers want to discuss Future State or DC in general with you, where can they do that?
You can find me on Twitter as The Emerald Enthusiast, where I do Green Lantern product reviews. I talk about comics, almost every day from the first tweet to the last. Patent pending, right? But you can catch me there to talk about Green Lantern, anything DC, Marvel, independent related. And find me there. I'm always down to talk about these things. I'm always immersed in the comic culture.
Awesome. And if you want to discuss any of Future State or what's coming in March and April from DC with me, you can at @Adam_LeafsFan on Twitter. The podcast and vidcast also has its own separate Twitter page. It's at MMNPDC. Steven usually does that, but he's not here. And so
there's a lot of geeky goodness there, so check it out.
Yes, sir. And the Facebook page is the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network Facebook page. Go there to Facebook, ask permission to join the group, and I will add you, and we can continue the conversation there. But that's it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you will go out and support the comic industry by buying these issues, be it physically or digitally. Please do so. And until next time, remember that Future State is for 2 months, from the first month to the last. So long, everybody.
So long, everyone.